Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome back to our continuing series on Dharma, presented by Professor G. Venkatraman. Last week, we presented the fourth talk in this series, and today we'll be bringing you the fifth question and answer session based on Professor's earlier talks in this series. The questions will be posed by a panel, and the panelists are, as always, Radio Sai's Bishu Prushti and Sri Aman Javeri, a research scholar from the Department of Management Studies at the Institute. And as always, Professor G. Venkatraman will be answering and clarifying the questions put up by the panelists. So over to Professor Venkatraman for his opening remarks and taking it further.
Sai Ram, and welcome to the series. I wonder how many of you are listening. For those of you who are listening, I offer my thanks and request you also to send us some questions. Otherwise, I can rig the discussion. So we don't want a rigged match, do we? All right, to prove that we are very fair and tough on our speaker, I will ask Bishu to pretend to ask a difficult question, but make it really easy. I'm disclosing the fact that this is all a rigged game.
Yes, you have actually given three talks based on this first chapter of Gurcharan Das's book, The Difficulty of Being Good. And in each of these talks, you have covered two, three very important ideas. And one thing that you ended with in your second talk is the failed hotline of Yudhishthira. And you explained that in the third talk to some extent. But yesterday, Aman and I, we were sitting and we were ruminating on what you had written. And both of us had this question. Yudhishthira is someone who is hailed as a Dharmaraja, whom Bhagwan also all the time spoke very highly about, his adherence to the principles of Dharma. If he also could not live up to following these principles, okay, it was one of those challenging moments of his life, but he is supposed to be the epitome of Dharma. If he also succumbs and if he also fails, then what about the normal so-called ordinary human beings and all of us who have many other challenges and going through the rigmarole of life with its so many vicissitudes. So what is your advice to all of us? What is the lesson that we should draw from Yudhishthira, and how is it possible, first of all, if Yudhishthira also fails, I mean, is it possible that we will succeed?
You're setting up an excuse. And I will counter it with the following example. Today, driving on today's roads is a big challenge. It's a challenge in a country like America where there are very clear-cut lanes, speed rules and all that. It is challenging in a different way in India where there are no roads and no rules. No roads and no rules.
Yes.
Now let's go back to America. You might have driven 50 years. But one slight distraction, you are in an accident which could be fatal to you and as well as to other people. This happened many times.
Sorry.
So when you are in that kind of an endeavor, there is no excuse for slackness. When you are a pilot, neurosurgeon, heart surgeon, there is no excuse. Even in ordinary life where the so-called moral dilemmas are not involved, you have to have concentration. What has happened is we have created a life system where our mind has been possessed by undesirable forces. And we have become so, we have been sold the mantra that our attention span is only so much and so much.
Hmm.
We have bought it. Simultaneously, we have been thrust into a life system which demands concentration. We have swallowed hook, line and sinker, a contradictory philosophy. What are we doing about it? How much time are we talking about? How much time do we spend thinking about it? We are trying to find, if Yudhishthira failed, why can't I fail? Even if this is not a moral question, in a way it is a moral question. Am I allowed to drive? Distracted. It's the question. There are many stories coming out of this. But for the present, I'll say in America they have found that previously it used to be drunken driving. Driving under influence, DUI they used to call it in law enforcement jargon. Now, driving and texting has become the biggest killer. Much more than drunken driving. Yes. It did not exist. What are they doing about it? They just try to pass laws, this, that and all that. But people, if they take polls, they say it should not be done. 90% say it should not be done. But 40% of the 90% admit that they text while driving. I'll just leave you with that. Think about it.
Sir, just to know a little bit more about that, you mentioned about this lifestyle that we are leading today, where our attention span is reducing. Sir, I would request you to shed some light on that, because I think the lifestyle that we are living as this generation is the only lifestyle that we know about. Because you have spanned so many generations, you'll probably be able to shed some light on what is going wrong today in the context which you have mentioned this, sir.
You have put it very nicely in the context of generations, but I'll put it in a different context, which applies to all generations. You have so much life. Let us take the average life expectancy of an Indian today. When I was young, it used to be 27 years. Meenu Sahni, in his famous book, Our India, published in 1939 or so, used to say average life expectancy was 27 years. Today it is above 50. Yes. You around this place, you can see fellows walk across the 80, across 90 and all that. Let us put it as 60, which is too young a age to die today. In 60 years, you have got that much of time given to you by God. What fraction do you spend thinking about God and connecting with God? We are wasting all that time. And it has been so in all ages. The only difference is in earlier ages, because of the ambience, to a certain extent, people were robotically dharmic. Because that was not the norm. They will go to temples, they will do worship. In that sense, they kept away from mischief. Okay? There was circumstance. And basically, because of festivals, pujas and this and that, God was so much in their life, the brakes are put on by society itself. Now society has thrown out the brakes and it made it possible for you to spend all the time on something. Even without anything, just with a smartphone and Wi-Fi, you will be wasting your time. So the question to be asked is, how have I managed my time? Who is responsible for time management? Actually speaking, we individually are. I can make a choice whereby I say, I'm not going to give this time to you, whoever that you is, except God. This time is reserved for my God. I'm going to spend it with Him. So, lifestyle makes it easier to abandon God, easier to forget God. But sir, in all times, people always had to make this choice. But because of the ambience, it encouraged godworldly attitudes and lifestyle. But today that is being systematically destroyed.
Sir, you seem to be alluding to some kind of an awareness that we need to create in ourselves. Something similar to what Swami has mentioned as constant integrated awareness. But sir, and you also mentioned that we need to spend time for Godwards and going towards God, you know, moving inwards. Sir, what do you mean when you say spending time towards God? Is it to spend more time doing bhajans or Veda chanting or, you know, Namasmarana? How would you define that, sir, going towards God?
Going towards God, at the end of the day, according to me, involves first recognizing that God is in every aspect of me, immanent in me. Next, He is immanent in everything in creation. As if I accept these two, first thing I will say, since God is in me, my behavior, thinking, speaking must be reflecting the divine. I cannot speak harshly, I cannot tell untruth, I must speak sweetly,
yes,
compassionately, my actions must be likewise. I have taken the first step. Next, if God is in me, God is also in you. Maybe there is a cloud covering the divine. If there is a candle and you put a pot over it, the light will not be seen. That might be happening in your case. Your delusion, your illusion, your fascination with the world might prevent you from realizing God is in you. So you will have appropriate behavior, which is tamasic, rajasic, whatever it is. I, who am aware of the God in you, even though you are not, I should not judge you by your nature. I should only try to say, this man is God, but he has got deluded. Is there any way in which I can remove that delusion? There is quite many ways of doing it. For example, you are rough and rude. I don't bother. I always try to see you, talk to you kindly. Initially, you may spurn me. But one day you need help. At that time I am there and I help you. Then you begin to see the value of the love that I give. Then you begin to change. So this is the way I now connect with you and connect with humanity. Next, above us, we are all part of nature. I will treat nature with respect. You know, in America and Western world, if you do the smallest thing to hurt to the dog, they become furious. All sorts of problems are there. But they will, without batting an eyelid, kill a cow and eat it. For us, that is a horror.
Yes.
For example, when Russians started their space program, the first satellite had no human being. Then after a few times, they sent a dog. Whole of Western Europe was scandalized. How can you send a dog? Western Europe sent monkeys. Americans sent monkeys. We did not shout, oh, you are sending Hanuman. We were probably having our own fights internally. So all these people are very selective. On the other hand, if a man says, I cannot kill any species and make it my food, though nature has built it, tiger has to eat the deer.
Yes.
But I am beyond the tiger. I am not a tiger. And yet tiger behaves better than me in respect to what it's supposed to do. Then I see God, that is also a jiva, that also has pain, pleasure. Maybe it has a lower form.
Yes.
So my attitude changes. I will not pollute water. I will not waste water. So I begin to worship nature as mother. Mother is not the physical mother. As Swami said, we have four mothers. First is the bodily mother. Next is the cow because it gives milk, because after the mother stops, the cow gives it, and it's very nourishing. Then Mother Earth, how do I live otherwise? And then the scriptures. Sharira Mata, Go Mata, Bhu Mata, Veda Mata. That's how Swami used to say. So now I sort of connected myself to four plugs for this thing. So I'm in resonance with the whole of creation. And then that means I am close to connecting to God. So, it can be done in any age, in the post-information age, in that age, by suitably organizing myself. So, in other words, hands in the society, head in the forest.
Yes.
We have to do something like that. And allow the distracting part of these worldly activities not to derail us. That's the way it is. That is tough. That's very tough.
The earlier lifestyles, the earlier way of living, that the question that you asked, Aman, I think because God was so much a part of their daily life, I think that reverence towards nature was there so much as a part of their daily activities.
See, it was built into the festivals itself.
Yes.
You had Saraswati Puja.
Yes.
It is showing knowledge, respect to knowledge. Knowledge is God. You had Ayudha Puja. You said that is respect to the tools because it gives me food. I treat it as more than an instrument.
Yes.
So on it goes. Wherever you see, if you plow, If you plow, you pray to Mother, I have to hurt you, but I can't help it, and so on.
And you worship all kinds of animals. You worship a rat.
See, the point is, they all contribute to an ecosystem. In God's ecosystem, there is no such thing as waste or unwanted. Mm. It has had a purpose. If its purpose is served, it will become extinct. But today, by our actions, we are deliberately disturbing this ecosystem. I'll give you a very simple example. Back in my early days when I was in service, we used to go to Baba Atomic Research Center. There will be buses. And the route I took would cross a big stretch of open land which used to be part of a backwaters. Later that was all stopped. But there was an open kind of field, something like 1 kilometer by 2 kilometers, something like that. And whatever grass was there, buffaloes used to graze. What you call stray buffaloes, didn't belong to anybody. They would die. Then we would see vultures coming and eating the meat. And of course now it's built up. Recently I heard a talk in BBC where a British ecologist has said vultures have disappeared in India. In city, middle of the city, the Parsi, Tower of Silence, the Parsis will leave the dead body, vultures will come and eat. Now they have disappeared. Almost extinct. All over India. And the reason is, can you guess what the reason is? Nobody went and shot the vultures. You would be surprised. The vultures also eat other things, plants and things like that, a bit of it. The flesh is most. Even the flesh has got polluted. How? Because it has eaten, the animal has eaten plants which have been grown using fertilizers. Oh. And the fertilizers and also pesticides have been put on those plants. Those pesticides, everything go into the animal, the herbivorous animal. When it dies, the vultures eat and all those pesticides come and they have caused cancer, this, that. They vanished.
Oh my God.
So, am I in harmony with nature? We have invented so many new chemicals which do not exist in nature that they have started playing havoc on nature. All this to improve our convenience. So, we have to be very careful to what extent we are disturbing nature.
Yes.
You previously everybody wore cotton, at best silk. And even silk, the Paramacharya of Kanchi said no, because you put the silkworm cocoon in the boiling water, I don't want that. He's the only sannyasi to wear khadi, as far as I know. In the old days, all the Matadhipatis will wear silk. He never wore that. He said, "This I won't wear anything that has been produced with violence."
Oh.
What did the silkworm do? You are putting in boiling water.
Yes.
He objected to it. So, that is reverence of nature.
Yes.
That anything that has life, I have no authority to take it. Who am I? I am not God. I can't play. Even today, for example, Pope Francis, he's asked about this and that. He says, who am I to say so-and-so is bad or not? My job is to help people.
Yes.
For the first time a Pope has said that. Yes.
I am reminded of Mother Teresa, who said, if we judge people, we'll have no time to love them.
Correct.
But returning to this chapter, Duryodhana's envy, as Gurucharan Das mentions that one of the reasons for envy is the inequality in society, and then he goes and talks about the socialism and capitalism. But he ends that chapter saying, at least that portion of the chapter, saying, if inequality are perceived as just and deserved, then there would be less envy. What are your views on this?
First of all, there are two kinds of inequalities. One which is created by the system. Okay? The other is imagined inequality. There are two fellows. They are on the same level. One fellow in a company, let us say, it's difficult for this to happen in government because of rules, but in company these things happen. One fellow is given a lot of promotion on the basis of at least better performance. Mm. The other guy says, that guy is lousy, just by, you know, being nice to the boss, he has got the promotion. So, he feels there is an inequality which is not just.
Mm.
But the company says it is merit. He is not able to see, so he is perceiving an inequality.
There's an imagine.
So that is common.
Yes.
He didn't deserve it, I deserve the Oscar.
Correct.
This kind of.
Yes.
But in this case, can you read this, restate the first part where people don't perceive the inequality?
No, he makes the statement that if inequality are perceived as just and deserved, then there would be less envy, because the whole Mahabharata, he says, because of Duryodhana's envy. And if
I want to know who is it that says just and who is it that says deserved.
Okay.
First of all, that is, in my view,
if society perceives the inequality as just.
No, basically it is a way of self-brainwashing, in my opinion.
Like, for example, he gives, suppose there is someone who has amassed a lot of wealth, but who has also contributed to society, then society feels that I think he deserves that position or that affluence, because anyway he has done something for us. So he takes that argument and says that if society feels that his affluence is just and deserved, then there will be no problem.
See, inequality is a term that is used when there is a large amount of it. If, for example, as he himself says in the book, nobody is jealous of the Queen of England.
Yes.
She's supposed to be rich.
Yes.
But, you know,
when the
if there is one off or two off,
yes.
In all kingdoms, kings are always rich.
Yes.
Nobody grudged that. But if you have a system that sort of takes away from you by exploitation,
yes.
And gives it, it's an upward wealth movement. It's not a downward. It's not wealth distribution, as the Americans say, when you give to the poor. It is wealth aggregation. You work very hard. You are paid very little. He becomes rich.
Mm.
In such situations, people will feel there has been an injustice.
Yes.
And what he is trying to say is, the other extreme is the communist system.
Yes.
The Soviet Union was communist. And there the people now say, we got taken care of. Education was free. Books were very cheap. Medical treatment was free. There were, of course, political restrictions. But if you are a scientist and you want to do various things, nobody. It was only meritocracy. There was no question of equality there. Landau had students. The best students went to him. People said, yes, I have to be worthy of going to that. I will work very hard, compete, get grades. That was considered fair.
Okay.
If you go to a race, and it's an Olympic race, and you have not taken drugs and all that, people applaud the winner. And the losers also say, maybe I should try next time. There is no manifest imposition of inequality. If there is such a thing via drugs and all, they are caught and driven out. But if you sort of keep the wages low, exploit, this has happened in all times, even in countries like America, with all the rules, and it happens even now under the radar and all that, then you will never get fairness. The point is, the kind of system that he is talking about requires just people as rulers, just managers, what I call enlightened workers, and so on.
Yes.
So for that you need dharma, society based on dharma. Now if you want to talk of such things in the society that has thrown dharma out of the wind, to the winds, it makes no meaning. It's an interesting academic, good idea, I would say, as Gandhi said, of Western philosophy.
Correct. Sir, in the previous explanation, you mentioned briefly about the tamasic dimensions of an individual. And I think in the talk that you gave, you have beautifully explained the AMB and MBA and BMA type of personalities. Sir, my question to you is, and I'm sure many of our listeners also would like to know, sir, is it possible for absolutely tamasic people to become directly sattvic? I'm asking you this question because if we read our saints and sages, there is a sort of a different view in this. Some set of people say that it is not possible to become sattvic directly. You have to first move from tamas to rajas, and from rajasic activity, then you have to become selfless, and then only you can become sattvic. Whereas there are some who say that sattva, rajas and tamas are only the qualities of the mind, and you are not the mind, you are beyond the mind, so you need not worry about them at all. You can probably directly jump from being tamasic to becoming sattvic. So what according to you is the right path, and how do we as individuals go about transforming ourselves from being tamasic, if we are, to being sattvic?
See, you are talking of gunas, of which there are three basic types, tamas, rajas and sattva. Actually, the gunas have a very wide spectrum. And when you characterize somebody as rajasic, tamasic, you are really putting them into a band. That is number one. Number two, a tamasic fellow may momentarily become sattvic and vice versa. Yes. Number three, this business of guna is rather like color TV. Color TV operates on mixing three basic colors, red, green and blue, RGB.
Yes.
Now if you mix RGB in various ratios, you get very many colors. For example, brown is not a color in nature. The rainbow is natural colors due to pure electromagnetic waves. Yet there is brown. Brown is a mixture of three colors. You cannot mix three electromagnetic things just like that. But you need complex interacting systems. The eye is one such. It can mix colors and produce colors that are only visible but do not exist. Brown is one such. Pink is one such. Maroon is one such. So I can mix RGB in any country mixture and I can get a wide spectrum. Therefore, when you talk of, you know, this step, it is like that. So you can go up to Tirupati on steps, but you can also go on a road which is longer and continuous. Take for example a boy of 5 years. He is a child. He doesn't know anything. He is too young to be categorized in some gunas. But he may have asanas. So there can be potential seeds and weeds which can come up. You put him in a gurukula. That is conditioning at a very early age. He may be having latent gunas, but before they come out, he is being made into a sattvic type by sort of breeding process. So he can short circuit. There may be flashes, even as a, what you call a brahmachari and a gurukula. Yes. He may be angry, he may be cheating, all those things are there. But the Guruji and his strong presence may find them out very quickly.
Yes, sir.
So, in a forest you get thorns, you get bushes with poisonous, berries and so on. But in an orchard or garden, you can nurse the right kind of plant. Gurukula was a sort of guna nursery. So it is not necessary that you have to go through this or what you teach in kindergarten. But in real life, it depends on whom you come into contact with. But I agree that in this, God's grace and samskaras play an important role. For example, when I was in Karachi, I was studying in a Catholic school where Advani and others studied, in fact, St. Patrick's High School. There was the one brother, Catholic brother, actually was a Keralite, Malayali. He used to teach Latin. So I used to interact with him and all that. And he was a nice man. Then when I came to Madras, because my father was transferred, I was in the Besant school. We all lived in huts. And there was a room master, Subramaniam his name was. He was very nice, he would tell us about many things. At night we will be sleeping, he will be talking to us. And then classroom I had Krishnaratnam was his teacher. He had a fad. he will say, I always am associated with green. Find a piece of green on me. He will use green ink. Somewhere you have to find out. This is a challenge. But he taught us a lot about life and so on. So it opened our minds. I mean, because of Annie Besant Association, he will also bring in philosophy and all that. So it depends on God's grace, what kind of path is open to you. But there are challenges all the way. And if somebody has warned you, you will control yourself. For me, that control came from what you call, by reading, I never read Gandhi's life. He was alive. So he used to be in the newspaper in those days. But I tried to know about him and things like that. But when he passed away, I actually heard the running commentary of the funeral. Melville de Mello did it non-stop. We never ate. He sat in a park. And he became an influence. And I never lost sight of that. So you get shaped. So there were institutions in those days which tried to train people to go from the lowest to the top in a very smooth path. And we have to realize that the ultimate kind of institution was provided by Bhagavan. We don't realize what he has done for society in that dimension. We talk of free education, Kodaikanal and all that. No. He was silently teaching, like Dakshinamurti, even though he was talking. That was a very beautiful silent message.
Absolutely. In fact, even as sir is narrating this, you know, we ourselves know of so many transformations that have happened. People have come to Bhagavan and instantly transformed into something unbelievable.
Yes.
So I think...
You should make the younger people aware of this.
Yes.
I have, as you say, I have climbed the mountain. Mine eyes have seen the Lord, says Martin Luther King.
Because yesterday I was talking to a member of the Hyderabad Sai Youth Team. Mm-hmm. This boy, before he became a student, he was a member of the Hyderabad Sai Youth Team, Venugopal. And at that time, you know, as a teenager, he got interested in Bhagavan. And even when he used to go to his college, in the bus, he used to read Summer Showers. He had become very fascinated with Bhagavan's teachings. And he had started, you know, taking one thing and start practicing. And there was one guy who was a gangster, a rogue in the college, etc. And because he also was from the same locality, they used to travel in the same bus. So one day, that boy was sitting next to him. And every day he would see that this Venugopal is engaged reading some book. So one day he got curious. I told, what is it that you're reading? He said, yeah, this is what I like and can I borrow it? So he takes that book. And Venu doesn't ask him for the book. He thought, I'll pick up one more copy. If he keeps that book, it is good. And that one book made so much difference in his life that next time he used to plan to get engineering students to Prashantinilayam. This boy said, I want to come. And he came and Swami gave an interview. And that Swami didn't speak to him much also. It was just that being in Swami's presence and what he had read transformed his life so much that Bhagavan mentioned that to him indirectly that, you know, he should get into civil services. And he took that up seriously. He became a topper in the class and he entered civil services. I mean, we have seen such amazing transformations, as say, silently. Silently.
See, when you keep an iron piece near a magnet, it becomes a magnet.
Yes.
There need not be any talk.
Yes.
The field of force, love force in this case, is very powerful. We don't understand it.
I think one last question before we wind up.
Can you stop that clock?
I wish so.
Okay.
No, because this whole chapter is about envy. Mm-hmm. And Gujaran Das says that the human tendency to evaluate one's well-being by comparing it with that of another is the cause of Duryodhana's distress. And he says that it's natural and, you know, envy is widespread. If envy was a fever, everyone would be ill and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, envy... is widespread, yes. People do compare and people do feel sad and bad, etc., etc. And he gives what positive envy, negative envy. Mm-hmm. But what would be your advice, sir? Yeah, we do agree that sometimes we feel...
Advice regarding what? I don't know what
advice regarding how to handle this problem of envy. Simple tips which we all can practice in our daily life.
Now you have asked me the toughest question and I wish the clock runs faster. You see, I look at that guy and I say, I don't have what he has.
Yes.
Supposing I turn the page and says, what is it that I have which he doesn't have?
Okay.
There are many things of that kind. Just to give an example, there may be a millionaire. You say, okay, you make millions a day, but I try to serve Swami a million times a day. At the end of the day, this gives me a lot more happiness than you get. You are worried whether the new millions you have acquired will be lost. So I am happier than you.
Yes.
Reverse jealousy. Actually, it should not be that. What I should try to do if I can, if the opportunity is ripe and all that is, he feels proud because of certain achievements. I would have to say that is not worth being proud about. And in that case, first I must have no jealousy. See, this happened many years ago. There was a man sitting in the veranda. He was my teacher actually in the college. Then he came around and he used to be associated with some of Sami's activity. I was sitting close to him. He was my teacher. He taught mathematics. Very good man, very brilliant man. And yet he was saying, look at that man, he's worth 300 crores. So I told myself, this fellow has got two houses in Bangalore, each of which is worth at least 2 crores. That's more than, why do you want 300 crores? So, but he was my teacher. I couldn't go and tell him, no, don't believe in all that. They have no values. But if there is an opportunity that is available, I would like to deflect his attention from making comparisons of this kind to something totally different. Get him absorbed in that, then he forgets it. If I argue with him, I say, don't talk about all these things, and shut up, you're talking philosophy, spirituality and all. Supposing I just talk to him about astronomy and say, yesterday I heard in the BBC this happened, all that. You arouse his curiosity, deflect him. Then you are helping him to forget envy at least for a while. There are many ways of doing these things. If we can, we must reach out and try to put out the fire.
And also, I thought one other way which Bhagwan...
In fact, I am thinking of using that to reaching out to the youth. This is a warning to youth.
And the other thought that came to me is when Bhagwan used to speak to students, he used to say that if someone is scoring a better mark than you, then instead of being envious, you should be happy. Swami used to say, you should be happy for the other person.
Actually, the fellow should be more than... The fellow who is scoring marks must go and help the others.
Correct.
Very often it's not that way.
Yes.
I must keep my this thing. But I have heard of many students here helping others.
Yes.
And that is not usually common. But around here it is better than the average.
Yes.
And I think a wonderful thing that sir has mentioned about how to go about going towards God. You know, first understanding that you are God, and then the next step is naturally, once you start seeing God's aspect in everybody.
No, I don't say I'm God. I'm supposed to behave like
behave,
God wants
like
me to,
God,
but at some point my ego will drop and I'll come to that.
See, God immanent in everything, within me as well as around me.
So I think once you start doing that, naturally our nature also, I think, will start changing.
And I think that answers all the questions.
Actually, your nature will not change. Do you know why?
Because our nature is inherently godly, sir.
Yeah, then
you
what?
Discover
no, nature is God. The illusion will stop dissolving.
Yes,
I am a deluded person.
Yes.
I think I am the body, I am not.
Yes.
That delusion will melt like morning.
And we cannot say that illusion is natural to us. They say envy is natural, it is not natural.
I want to say that. In the today's world, it is natural.
Greed is
our
natural.
Our true nature, that's what Swami was hammering into it. Your true nature is not that.
Yes.
It is the absence of that or masking or delusion of that true nature that is creating the problem. Darkness does not exist by itself. Light alone exists. But if you can create a shadow with some object and things like that.
Yes.
The sun is always shining, yet we say the sun sets. Sun cannot set. It can burn out. But that's billions of years later.
I think that's the fundamental point, even for us to move from tamasic to rajasic to sattvic.
I think when we feel we are tamasic, what nonsense! I have no business to be tamasic. I was born to do better things.
Yes.
And quickly go. That was what unique about Mahatma Gandhi. He was a very ordinary person.
Yes.
But he said, no, I should not, that is not my true nature. He said, God is truth and my way of approaching him is through ahimsa. So he set a goal and the road and the vehicle. And he just stuck to it, that's all. He's in his own hatting, Sabarmati, 1926.
Yes. Absolutely. Wonderful. This morning I was listening to Radio Sai in Ameristream. There was a drama, and there was a drama staged by, I think, Balika students of Mumbai on Gandhiji.
I see.
And, you know, they were talking about exactly this thing. And, in fact, what struck me the most is where Gandhiji, you know, he cuckoos. And
yeah,
we know the famous incident, and where mother gets very
angry
wild.
And all that.
But the most important thing is mother says that what sin I have committed, that such a son is born to me who lies.
Yes.
And that was the pain of the mother. And when I heard that, the thought that came to me is, you know, every time we do something, the mother of all mothers, our divine Swami, who always told that, you know, my love is more than 1,000 mothers, you know, whenever we do something, he will think, why is it that, you know, why is it that they are doing this? So I think that is something perhaps it's for us to keep in mind. Thank you so much, sir. And I really wish that we could continue this, but Raghu is waiting to take over for the next segment. And I do hope that we will go on with this session. And the next week, depending on whether we will have one more musing or one more Q&A, we will take it however it goes.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, that brings to an end the fifth Q&A session based on Professor Jivenka Traman's earlier talks in this new series based on Dharma. We hope you like this session, and next week we'll be continuing the present series. So please don't forget to tune in then, and we shall alert you in advance with web and video announcements about what's coming up the next week. So watch out this space. And we thank you for listening, and as usual, the podcast of this program may be accessed by our website, www.radiosai.org. And dear listeners, coming up next on Thursday Live is the segment Service, Love in Action. Thank you and Sai Ram.
Tune in to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Krishna. Krishna. Mohana Sham Gopala Madhava Mohana Sham Gopala
Raghukula Bhushana Rajivanayana Rambanandan Satya Sai Rama Neela Kantha Sada Shiva Jagadisha, Jagadisha, Paramesha Shiva Shakti Mai Sai Janani
Shiva
Sharanam Pahi Gajananam
Sharanam Sharanam Pahi Gajananam
Sharanam Sharanam Pahi Gajananam
Sharanam Sharanam Pahi Gajananam Parmadaya
बोलो गोविंद राम बोलो
साई राम बोलो गोविंद राम बोलो
साई राम बोलो गोविंद
राम बोलो
अयोध्या वासी राम है द्वारक में आए द्वारकवासी श्याम है शिरडी में आए
द्वारकवासी श्याम है शिरडी में आए मानस भजरे गुरु चरणम
मानस भजरे गुरु चरणम
मानस भजरे गुरु चरणम
दुस्तर भव सागर तरणम
केशा नारायणा
केशा नारायणा
परतीशा नारायणा
परतीशा
नारायणा
नंदलाला श्याम सुंदर नंदलाला
राधारमणा गिरिधारी गोविंदा नील मेघ सुंदरा नारायण गोविंदा
जगदोधारा हरि विठला